In your research, how did you, like, consider that there was a correlation between processed foods and substance abuse?
Okay, let me explain, if you don't mind. And you're writing an article, right?
Yes.
Okay, so before we get off, I'll give you my email so you can send it to me, and I'll publish it for you, you know, all over the place, so you'll have an extra, you know, 15, 20,000 people read your article. Because I have a pretty good social media presence. But to make a long story short, I have a company called Named Program, N-A-M-E-D Program, LLC. And the website is nameprogram.com. Like I'm named Keith.
Yeah, I have heard of your program.
Oh, okay. So anyhow, in that program, what we try to do very diligently is to make sure, and we usually go through, or we almost always go through an addiction facility or a rehabilitation center, so they have a lot more care, you know, so they're not just coming and going.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's more safety nets there and there's more controls there. But what the concept was to not stimulate the opiate receptors.
Okay, yeah.
And you know what opiate receptors are, right?
Those are basically the receptors for, like, dopamine, right?
Well, it's, believe it or not, it's more than that. I was sort of surprised, too, and I have my doctorate in nutritional science, but we have opiate receptors in our brain, our spinal cord, and our gastrointestinal tract.
Uh-huh.
And you would think that something that to do with opiates, but it's not. They're called opiate receptors because that's one of the things that stimulates them. But, you know, cocaine stimulates them, alcohol stimulates it, and several different foods stimulate it.
Mm-hmm.
When the opiate receptors are stimulated, it releases chemicals, and those chemicals give us urges.
Yeah.
All the urges that we get except for sex come from the opiate receptors.
Okay.
So, if you are addicted to alcohol or cocaine or heroin, which is getting really bad lately, and your body knows that, when the opiate receptors are stimulated and releases the chemical, that's what your body thinks it wants, because that's what it's used to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing for any drug, prescription drugs, etc. If you're not addicted to a drug or alcohol, then it's whatever else you're either addicted to or used to having. And some of the things that stimulate the opiate receptors are sugar,
mm-hmm.
gluten,
mm-hmm.
a lot of dairy products. Say that again.
Isn't gluten just sugar?
No, gluten is like wheat byproducts.
Okay.
Dairy products.
Mm-hmm.
Processed foods and sugar substitutes, except for stevia.
Okay.
So what happens is, in my program, what I did is I made sure none of the diets, none of the menus have any of that in it, or very, very little, because I don't want their opiate receptors to be stimulated, because what they do then is they just switch the addiction, since they can't get the drug and they're in a facility.
Mm-hmm.
They switch the addiction from heroin or oxycodone to sugar or caffeine or, you know, things like that. So that's why, if you ever seen people that are addicted to drugs and they're coming off it, they're just scoffing down huge amounts of candy and sugary substances, or they're drinking caffeine like it's out of style, or if you've ever been to an AA meeting or an NA meeting, you'll see, I think in the United States, about 15% of the people smoke, and in AA or NA meeting, it's 95% of the people smoke.
Yeah.
Because they're transferring the addiction from one thing to another. So by not stimulating the opiate receptors, and them getting used to, in my case, in a facility, working out, eating properly, amino acid therapy, talking to a psychiatrist, a psychologist, and things like that.
Yeah.
They're not transferring the addiction, except, you know, hey, I came in and I could only walk a quarter mile, now I could walk 5 miles, and they're getting their self-esteem from other places.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what my program was designed for. Now, your question is on processed foods in particular. So to answer your question, processed foods contain, in most cases, a very large amount of sugar.
Yeah.
And that'll stimulate the opiate receptors. So if the people are involved with drugs or alcohol, it'll tell them, or their body will tell them or give them the urge to have more of it.
Yeah.
So processed foods contain a lot of sugar, a lot of gluten, a lot of additives and preservatives, and some of those right by themselves, is research that shows that it stimulates the opiate receptors.
Yeah.
So the bottom line is, if you want to try not to stimulate the opiate receptors, you have to, number one, follow my diet, which, by the way, you could get for free, a week of it for free off my website.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's, you know, and it'll give you like 21 meals plus 14 snacks. So you could just have an idea. Just go to nameprogram.com and you'll see on the top a free week, and then you can get a pretty one. Or you could just go on to nutrition and scroll down and get, you know, just a regular printed one. One way you have to give like your email address, and the other way you could just do it yourself. But, you know, so this way you could have some samples. But what I try to do is make sure I have as close as possible to all natural, whole, real foods. I'm not a vegan, you know, so I have meats in there. I have chicken, I have fish, I even have beef, you know, as long as it's lean. But I try not to have any additives or preservatives or dyes or steroids or things of that nature. And I definitely stay away from the main culprits of sugar and gluten and dairy. Those three are the three biggest ones, plus, of course, caffeine. And you can't tell them, at least if you're dealing with the addiction centers, you can't tell them not to have nicotine, even though they shouldn't. But if you say that, you won't get any customers. They told me that point blank. They said, if you say that the people can't smoke, forget it. I can't do that. I'd lose all my customers. That's what every place told me at the beginning when I started it. Yeah. So, but it makes sense because it's a different type of addiction. And as silly as it sounds, would you rather have your brother or sister or mother or son addicted to smoking or heroin? Well, everybody would pick smoking, and then you try to get them off of that. So I guess it's the lesser of the evils.
Yeah. So you still don't support that in your program, though, right?
I still what?
You don't support it in your program, right?
No, I still don't. I don't suggest they smoke at all, and I mention that they shouldn't smoke, but I just don't make as big a deal out of it as I would like to, because then I would never get any of the clinics to do it. I mean, they told me point blank. They said, if you mention that they can't smoke, forget it. I'll lose 80% of my customers, you know, because these are people that are staying there for 30 and 60 and 90 days.
Yeah.
And they said, you know, they really just can't afford it. So I thought that was pretty interesting. Let me just tell you one other part, and again, it's a little sciencey, but since you're going to write it up. Besides my program not stimulating the opiate receptors, which is very important, because this way when they go home from a facility, they don't just, you know, have a friend who says to them, hey, you want some coke? And yeah, sure, you know, because they've had their opiate receptor stimulated for the whole time anyhow, so it's an easy switch. This way it's harder. The other thing that...
Go ahead. Can you repeat that?
Yes. See, if they're in a facility and they're not, you know, like an addiction facility, a rehabilitation facility, and they haven't touched any of the drugs for 30, 60 days, that's very good. But if during that time their opiate receptors have been stimulated the whole time through other methods, the relapse rate when they're gone and now they're not in a controlled environment is very high. In the United States, the relapse rate is approximately between 85 and 87% of the people go back to the drugs. Yeah, go back to the drugs or alcohol within a year. I spoke to a radio station in Indianapolis. They told me it was 90%. It's actually pretty bad. The other thing that I do, though, is everybody, you know, who's addicted, but really most Americans have what's called inflammation. And I don't mean a swollen ankle or something like that. I mean internal inflammation.
Internal inflammation. How does that happen?
Internal inflammation is caused by having a low pH in your gut, basically. And that's from drinking like sodas and eating the way, you know, eating a Western diet.
Yeah.
And so it gives us a low pH, and that's not what we're supposed to have. It's supposed to be a little bit above 7. And it's called acidosis, you know, when you have a low pH there. So what my diet does is it raises the pH. It's basically a high pH diet, which the people won't notice it. And I also do the same thing with water. I recommend they have higher pH water, which you could just take a pitcher of water and put lemons and limes in it overnight to raise
it. Is that like the alkaline water?
Yes. But you don't have to get real fancy and expensive. You could get a machine that does it. You could buy it by the bottle. Or you could just take a pitcher of regular water and put a few cut up lemons and limes overnight. Like I have it in my refrigerator now. I have one. I don't know why my wife did that. I have one with lemon and one with lime instead of mix. You know, different bottles just to raise the pH of it. So between the water and my menus, it raises the pH, and that helps with the inflammation. The reason why I want to do that is inflammation causes several problems. It makes your arthritis worse. If you have Crohn's disease or fibromyalgia, it could put pressure on your heart or your brain. But the part that I'm most concerned with is when you have inflammation, it throws your insulin mechanism, it makes it so it doesn't work properly. And if your insulin mechanism doesn't work properly, either don't process the sugar properly, so you have more urges for sugar, which is then going to stimulate the opiate receptors, which will then release the chemical and tell your body to have more drugs or alcohol or, you know, whatever it is the problem that the people have. Or it doesn't do that, and it tells all your cells in your body to drop its sugar. You know, like you need the energy right now, and even though you don't, and that'll do the same thing, it'll stimulate your opiate receptor. So I want to get rid of that, and I want to do that before they go home. And then I have a special thing, if you looked on my website, it says In Recovery, where I let them stay on the program after they leave, so they could get, I give them a special code after they leave the facility, so they could still get all the different menus and recipes and ask questions for free for as long as they want, because the facility pays a monthly fee.
Insulin is what absorbs the sugar?
It's not so much it absorbs the sugar. Insulin, you know what diabetes is, of course, right?
Yeah.
There's two types. One is diabetes type 1, where they have to take insulin and they have a pump, or they have to take shots, etc. And then there's diabetes type 2, which hopefully they don't have to take insulin, but lots of times they do. Insulin helps control the sugar. It doesn't absorb it. It helps the body utilize the sugar.
Okay.
So if it's working properly, you know, everything's working great. If it's not working properly, meaning the body's either producing too much, so you need more, so it's giving you urges for more and more sugar, or it's going too slow and it's not processing the sugar. Either one is bad, and it causes at least diabetes type 2.
Mm-hmm.
which we call voluntary, because that's more of a lifestyle situation from what you eat and not working out.
Yeah.
So that's what it does for diabetes. Well, in this particular case, because that's something that stimulates the opiate receptors, the same thing happens. So, and I don't want that to happen. So this way, if I could send them home after they're in a facility for a month or two, and they don't have inflammation anymore, and the opiate receptors haven't been stimulated for a long time, they're used to the diet, and they've been working out, and they feel much better about themselves, it greatly increases the success rate of withdrawal and lowers the relapse rate. And that's
how much would you say it will lower to?
How much?
Yeah, like by what like percent would you like?
Okay, well, let me answer this specifically since you're writing it down. You need 3 years of testing to make a real medical claim of what it changes it to, and I don't have that. Now, if you word the question, if I was to make a wager, what would I bet that it'll go to? You know what I mean? So this way I'm not making a legal medical claim. It'll at least double it. So if it's 13 to 15%, it'll go to 26 to 30%. I feel very, very confident on that. But I don't want to mislead you. To make a real, real legal claim, you need 3 full years of testing, and I have like 6 months only. My results have been excellent so far, but, you know, not enough to make a legal claim. So, however you word that, say, Dr. Cantor said he can't make a legal claim, but if he was to give his honest opinion, or if he was to make a bet, make a wager, he believes it should at least double it.
Okay.
And then, did you ever hear of Randy Haverson?
Randy Haverson. Mm-mm.
Okay. He does programs specifically designed for colleges.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I'm going to give you his website right now. It's called Rise, R-I-S-E, Speaker.
Rise Speaker.
Mm-hmm. But his name is Randy Haverson. He's been around a long time, and he came up with a program. It says it's called Party with a Plan. In other words, he believes that you can't get the college kids to not drink or not get high at all. So let's try to figure out a way to do it. And he made up, like, I believe it's like a point system and stuff like that. So how they could still drink some, still get high some. His is more about alcohol than anything. But and still do good in school and not get hooked. And I'm more of a naturalist, so I'm just saying, okay, you know, I don't want you to get hooked at all, but I don't preach, okay, have zero alcohol. I had 2 kids, and although my son drank almost next to nothing, I'm sure my daughter partied a little bit more, but, you know, they're both healthy, and they worked out a lot, and they ate really well, so I never had a problem. So to tell somebody, if they're addicted, then you have to say you can't do anything. But if they're not addicted, I think you might get some really good notes and ideas from Randy Haverson, and it's called Rise Speaker.
Thank you. How does like the correlation between the processed food and drugs, like how does that affect society? Like, would it affect the like health and medical care?
Well, let's answer the question: how does alcohol and drugs affect society? That's the real question. There's approximately 27 million addicts in the United States.
Oh, wow.
So if you get rid of the people, let's say, like under 10 and like over 65, that's well over 10%, or at least 10% of the people in the United States are addicted to either illegal drugs, prescription drugs, or alcohol. And that's a huge number, and that is a big drain on our society, economically, days lost of work, productivity, sickness, and then the ones that are really addicted, they have to go to eventually to some type of rehabilitation center. or addiction center, you know, which is pretty much the same thing. So you're talking about a huge drain on society monetarily.
Yeah. Be like the estimation.
I couldn't even do it. It's huge, though. Hundreds of billions of dollars a year.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it's huge.
Then why doesn't the U.S. really try to do anything about it?
Well, you know, it's a fine line between trying to get people do what's right and a democracy. So sugar is bad for us. We know that in excess. But when Mayor Bloom, I think it was Blumenthal, the mayor of New York, what was his name, Blumenthal?
I'm not sure.
Karen, what was the mayor's name in New York?
Blumenthal?
Yeah, I think it was Blumenthal. When he said you could only have sodas, that was so big, remember?
Yeah.
Okay. Everybody made fun of him. So, there's a lot of things that we should do, like, you know, if every American worked out for, you know, 30 minutes a day or an hour every other day, our healthcare costs, within a relatively short period of time, would go down drastically. But can you really do that in a democracy, force somebody to do something? You know, can you tell people they can't have sugar, that they're having too much salt, even though it's really not the salt, it's the ratio of sodium to potassium, but for an easy method, they said salt. So we could recommend it, we could talk about it. I'm on the radio, we're speaking to people like you all the time about what they should eat and what they shouldn't eat. You could look at my other site, which is DR for doctor, KeithCantor.com, and have, under resources, I have an article on how proper nutrition affects almost every major disease. The CDC says 75% of all chronic diseases are nutrition related.
Okay. Those diseases are nutrition
related. But again, it's a democracy, so it's a question of doing what's right, doing what you think's right, and becoming what they would call a nanny state or even almost a dictatorship. You know, look at the problems they have with guns. You know, they know people are killed with guns a lot, but you have at least as many, if not more, people that think the Second Amendment is more important.
That is true.
You know, well, it's the same thing. If you start trying to regulate sugar and things like that, you'll start getting a lot of kickback. Now, I did a report, not myself, it's called, you'll see it if you go to the DR Keith Cantor site under resources. It was called the Blue Ribbon Advisory Panel, where we were asked by Congress to do a report on how to save money on the healthcare system without a mandate.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a lot of things like that, but we couldn't mandate anything. So like I said, stop the sugar subsidy. We're paying them to give us stuff that's not good for us, like we used to do with tobacco. Now, all the tobacco farms are subsidized. They finally took that away, but now all the sugar is subsidized. I think on the debate last night, they said they get 40% of the subsidies, or they spent 40% of the lobbying money, but it was some huge amount of money for something that we know isn't good for us. So I wouldn't tell people they can't have it. I would tell them it's not good for them, but I wouldn't pay the growers. So there's things that we could do that aren't as extreme as mandating things, so you could keep away from the politics as much as possible, but where you could still slow down a lot of the problems.
Okay.
Well, and you're in Georgia, so Georgia is not a liberal place. So if you try to recommend anything like that in Georgia, you'd have to move colleges. Or use a pen name.
Yeah. The kids at our school themselves, they were quite upset when they started taking away the junk food from the machine.
My son went to Clemson, which is a very conservative school. But still, it was conservative, and they believed in that. But as soon as the government wanted to do more things, and like using the Affordable Care Act as a question, as an example, people weren't for that because they didn't think the government is good at running big programs. And at least both of us have seen, at least over the last bunch of years, they're not good at running big programs. So do we want to let them control more stuff? So I think we have to let the private sector do it and give the proper incentives to the private sector and not over-regulate them so we can do things like what I'm doing and hundreds of other doctors like me are trying to do to fix this problem of addiction in the United States.
So are you trying to, expand your program?
Yeah, I'm trying to get it into every addiction center in the United States.
Okay.
And if I did that, number one, I'd really be famous. But number two, I'd really feel like if I could get them all to do it and follow the regular programs and use amino acid therapy and exercise and, have a psychiatrist, a psychologist there and eat properly, plus follow my menu so I got rid of the inflammation and didn't stimulate the opiate receptors, I really feel like we'd have a drastic change in the rates of success and a drastic lowering of the rates of relapse.
Okay. I have one more question.
I'll let you ask two.
Wait, what?
I said I'll let you ask two more questions.
Okay, so you're not on the schedule, right?
No, I was trying to be funny.
Okay, so wouldn't there be less of a correlation if there was with healthy processed food, not really food with heavy sugar and salt?
Yes. If you use foods that don't stimulate the opiate receptors, there would be much, much, much less correlation between addiction and food. If you use foods that do stimulate the opiate receptors, then there's going to be a big correlation. And right now, processed foods, if you look at almost any processed foods, they have a lot of the things that stimulate the opiate receptors in it.
Mm-hmm.
Either sugar, gluten, dairy, or sugar substitutes except for stevia. All of the caffeine, all of those things have a major effect on stimulating them. And that's what most processed foods have. Or they have additives and preservatives that on their own stimulate the opiate receptors. So, but if everybody used all natural foods, the correlation would really drastically go down and the health would increase in the United States.
Yeah. You said you've been working on this for 6 months, right? 6 months?
Well, I got the trademark, but I just started putting it into places about 6 months ago.
Okay, so how did you, discover the correlation?
Well, it was a friend of mine was opening up some addiction centers, some of the higher-end ones.
Yeah.
And he called me up because he knew I was a doctor of nutritional science, and he said to me, hey, would you do me a favor and be on my board of directors? So I said, yeah, sure. Then he said, would you check out my menus? I said, yes. So then when I started researching it, that's when I started seeing the correlation. And what really threw me off was I'm looking at opiate receptors, and there's nothing about opium. You see opiate receptors, and you see diabetes. You look at opiate receptors, and you see Crohn's disease and all these other diseases, because that's where all the money is.
Yeah.
In the bigger diseases. It wasn't in drugs. When the president took office, President Obama, there was less than 4,000 addiction facilities. Now there's over 15,000. So he increased that. He saw the problem, and he increased that drastically. Now it's more of a business, you know, where a company can concentrate on that and get a return, whereas before you had to go after the major diseases and you couldn't just do it for, you know, a few thousand addiction facilities. It was too small.
Wait, so after Obama, he started to expand on the addiction facilities, right?
Yes.
Okay.
It increased about 400% under President Obama over the last 7 years or so.
An increase.
Not the, I don't mean addiction increased that much.
No, the facility.
The, you know, places that handle the addiction. Yeah, I don't want to blame the president for the addictions. Even though in Georgia that would probably make me pretty popular, but no, he had nothing to do with the addiction problem. But he did provide funding and things of that nature to make it easier to open the facilities.
Okay. So, what are you, like, what are your plans, or how are you exactly going to spread?
Well, if you look at my site and look under the blog, I have almost every expert in the field endorsing what I'm doing.
Oh,
and
I'm really?
In almost every magazine that's in the field, and I'm on radio or newspapers at least a couple of weeks talking about it and speaking about it. So between that and then the successes that I'm getting from the clinics, and as the word spreads, which clinic do you want to go to? The one that has the name program in it, that has a higher rate of success, or the one across the street that has a lower rate of success, but the swimming pool has a slide in it? You know, the people have to make decisions, and don't laugh. That's how they make a lot of the decisions.
Really?
Yeah, I've been told by people that they're paying this much money, and if they want cream in their coffee, we have to let them have cream in their coffee, or I'm going to lose them. And I said, well, can't we give them, like, almond milk or, you know, soy milk and stuff like that? And some people don't want to take the chance on losing customers. You have to remember, it's still a business. If they can't cover their bills, they're not going to be able to help any addicts. So you have to find a medium to use my program as close as you can to 100% without losing customers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it never entered my mind that somebody would say, if I can't have regular cream with my coffee, I'm leaving and I'll stay addicted to oxycodone. I mean, I never thought about something like that in my life, but they feel like they're giving up so much already that they don't want, you know, they draw a line. So you just have to be reasonable and help as many people as you can.
I can understand that. So are you trying to prevent processed foods in general?
Well, if you look at my site, you'll see I talk about all natural all the time, because processed foods cause lots of problems, not just addiction problems. They cause lots of problems. And like I said to you before, the CDC says 75% of all chronic disease is nutrition related. So, and I push that as much as I can, whether I'm talking about addiction or anything else. The more pure or natural you can make the food, the better it is.
Yeah.
You know, for us. But no, it's too big of an industry to on and to stop it. There's hundreds and hundreds of millions and billions spent on advertising.
Yeah.
So, you know, you just have to pick your battles.
Yeah. But, like, if there's, you know, the correlation between processed food and cancer is ignored, then why wouldn't this be ignored, too?
Well, first of all, the correlation between processed food and cancer isn't being ignored. It's just that the people that are pushing cancer, you know, the cure for cancer, don't have as much money as the people that, you know, as the food companies. But if you listen to, I think it was Huckabee, He was one of the presidential candidates. He's very low in the polls, but he's one of the presidential candidates. He said one of our main priorities should be to take care of cancer, heart disease, diabetes, and he picked like the top four diseases, and he said that'll have a drastic impact on America. So it's starting to become more and more mainstream, and I think three of the candidates all had children that either lost them or were addicted, or a family member or a child. So they brought up the addiction problem also in the debates. So it's starting to get more and more national attention.
Okay.
It just takes a long time.
Yeah.
But, you know, sooner or later it'll pass a point where it goes quick. So, like, who would have thought 5 years ago that gay marriage would be so acceptable? You know, almost everywhere. You know, if they said that to somebody in Georgia 5 years ago, they'd be hysterical laughing. I think this, I'm hoping the same thing will happen with the food and with addiction. Does that make sense? Hello? Somehow I lost you. I don't know why. It was a regular phone.
Yeah. I think my phone dropped the call. I'm not sure.
Oh, good. I feel better then. Anyhow, but did that make sense, what I said?
Can you repeat it?
Well, what I said is I think over time we're going to reach a tipping point, where it will become much more important to the United States. And I use the example of gay marriage. Whether you were for or against it, 5 years ago, nobody would have thought it would have went as quickly as it did. And I think the same thing is true with, all natural foods and the addiction problem. I think it's going to reach a point because now in the presidential debates they're talking about it. You know, that's...
I think it's going to reach a point where it becomes very, it's going to be prevalent and it's going to,
It will become more prevalent over time. The amount of time is up to people like me and you to push it and push it and push it. But at least with all the presidential candidates mentioning addiction and mentioning, you know, that we have to work on the major diseases and stuff like that, I think that helps.
Thank you.
Oh, no problem. Thanks a lot. And if you have any questions, you have my cell phone. You can give me a call.
Yeah, thanks. I will.
And look up that Rise speaker.
Rise speaker, yeah. I'll definitely do that. I have it written down right here.
And it's Randy Harrison because he's dealing with it very directly.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's just what, not really trying to get rid of the problem, but more trying to work with it.
Yeah, to make it so it's much, much less of a problem. It's called Party with a Plan. I think it's a book that he just came out with. And he's a very, very smart individual.
Okay.
Not as good looking as me, but he's pretty smart.
I'm sure.
Okay, well, have a great day.
You do too.
Thank you.